beautiful. Okay, let's reconvene our budget panels. It's now 10:30, and that means the Portland Water Bureau is up. Director Stuhr, take it away.
Well, good morning. Thank yous, I guess, are still in order. We're joined by our two friends back here from AFSCME, Rob Wheaton and Rob Martineau. Welcome to the commissioners, Madam Auditor. Thank you for being here. And I admire the stamina of all of you. I think we're the last one. So that means this should be quick and you should be gentle, right? If only. Also, thank you to Alan Warman and the crew of the pub that we've worked with for months putting our budget together, and Janice Thompson on the Cub, who also provides valuable commentary and advice. Mike had three things. I have three things. I find that's about the only thing I can remember. At my advanced age, I can hang on to three things. So these are my three things. First, system resilience. Resilience is more than earthquakes, but I like to talk about earthquakes. The second thing is regulatory compliance. We are probably among the most highly regulated things in the city. There are things we have to do, no matter whether anybody likes them or not. And so we believe in complying with regulation. And the last one costs some money, more on that in a bit, but it's something that is extremely important and that we are very proud of. We work very hard with the commissioner and his staff, a whole bunch of community stakeholders. We were actually helped by an audit. Audits are more than policing functions. Some very smart person gets to spend a lot of time looking at something, and we got good ideas from the auditor's office. So my third thing is low-income assistance, and that is both my thing and Mike Jordan's thing because we both pay for it. So those are the three takeaways, and we'll talk about those more as we go. 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That is the water system. You can turn your tap on, and pretty much without fail, you can expect clean water that you can safely drink any hour of the day or night. It doesn't matter if it's freezing outside, if we've had 50 main breaks, or 2 years ago we had 92 main breaks in 2 weeks. That's a record for us. We are there. As I mentioned previously, we're highly regulated. We are regulated by Oregon Health Authority, by the Environmental Protection Agency, who gives us lots of attention. But we have lots of other regulators that we have to deal with, too, because we own this thing called the Bull Run Watershed. The watershed is a little something around 100,000 acres. That is about the size of the city limits of Portland. Because of that facility and the dams on that facility, we are also regulated by NOAA Fisheries, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, various state agencies, DEQ, and so on. We do thousands of tests all over the city every year to make sure that the water we deliver is compliant in all respects. Main breaks. 200 main breaks a year, roughly, would be a decent average in an average year. That's probably about in the middle of water utilities nationwide. There's a lot of reasons for main breaks. You can't really draw too many categorizations that would apply to everyone, but that's what we have. In the winter, that's our kind of season. In January, when it starts hitting the cold, we worry about our main break freeze-type seasons. We also provide water for firefighting. The system is not specifically designed to fight fires, but we do provide the facility for firefighters to take advantage of what water happens to be available in that location. And that's those Blumen fire hydrants that you see every 500 feet all over the city that cars like to run into at night, and your dog might have an attraction to for some reason. You might also recall in the very recent past we had a five-alarm fire. We had our operating engineers on site, valved off parts of the city to make sure they could get as much water as they could. I have no idea how much water they used. We don't monitor it. It's just a benefit provided by the water utility, and I'm sure we're all glad we do that. major assets in the system, we have a lot, a lot of assets. Unlike most of the bureaus in the city, our reach goes 40 miles from here. The city population is roughly 450,000. We provide water to almost a million people in the surrounding area, and it takes a lot of physical infrastructure to provide those facilities and to measure it and monitor it. What's our system worth? $8.9 billion. Now, you heard Mike mention he had 2,500 miles of pipe. I have roughly 2,500 miles pipe. Why is his pipe more expensive than mine? Both of us benefit from gravity. Most sewer stuff moves by gravity, which means the pipes are on a slope, which means they get deep very quickly. Most of my pipes are 4 feet deep. You don't see too much shoring on my jobs. Almost every one of BES's jobs are short. The pipe itself may cost roughly the same. The installation costs are huge. BES also has those big treatment plants out on Columbia Boulevard and elsewhere. We don't have big treatment plants yet. More on that in a bit. System condition. Our $8 billion worth of system. You can see there that we're in reasonably good shape, but what I worry about is the portion that is in not so good shape. 7% of our system is in poor to very poor condition. That doesn't sound like a lot until you realize where that is. In the case of the supply program, it's roads in the watershed. We have to be able to get around the watershed. The roads were maintained for a long time by U.S. Forest Service, and they were subjected to budget cuts, so we have work to do there. 9% of our transmission system is in poor condition, and you might not think that's such a big deal, but that 9% includes our conduits, in other words, all the water that comes to the city. These pipes are very old, and they're in poor condition. One of the things that we have in our program is to do an assessment of the conduits. It's one of the few places that we can do non-destructive testing because, depending on the timing of the year, we can drain them, parts of them, and look at them. Terminal storage, 7% is in poor condition. It doesn't sound like much, but it's the roof mostly of Powell Butte 1. It's a very old facility. The roof has got cracks in it. We've sealed them up so that we can use them for now, but it's also not seismically up to date. And when we do manage to get this thing restored and put back together and it's seismically up to date, we will have 100 million gallons of storage sitting on top of that hill, which will serve us well in the earthquake. And note, I didn't say if the earthquake comes. The earthquake is coming. It's kind of like Game of Thrones. Winter is coming. The earthquake is coming. Budget resources and requirements. Where does our money come from? That's on the left. Bond proceeds, $109 million. There's that little skinny bar in there that says, I can't even hardly read it, capital revenues. That's mostly from developers and people paying us to do things for them to hook them up to the water system. And then monthly charges, that's what comes in on the water portion of the so-called water bill. The annual cost to operate and maintain the water system, looking at the other side, is about $90 million. Our capital program for the next few years will cruise along at $135 or $136 million. And you can see down there the kind of light gray-green bar, $58.1 million. That's about 20% of the total is debt service. What are our priorities? First and foremost, our water is safe to drink and meets or exceeds regulatory standards. That is our driver. We are heavily monitored and regulated, and we test the water to death to make sure that we do that. Second, you can turn the tap and you expect water to come out, and for the most part, I think that is true. We want to make the system well maintained, and everything we do, we want to increase our seismic resilience. And certainly, last but not least, we believe we use our resources wisely. I would say that at least on the fiscal front, that's endorsed by our auditors. We get audited, and we have a AAA bond rating. There's 10 or less utilities in the nation that can claim that bond rating. Equity measures. We do a lot of work in the equity arena. We've done in the past year senior management and staff training. We've done a pilot project to increase outreach and accessibility to the low-income discount program. It takes a lot of personal work on the part of our community relations staff. We've hired some additional outreach staff to deal with that. We have an equity lens for assessing communications materials for bias, so we work very hard to make sure that not only is our information clear, but it doesn't offend somebody inadvertently. We've done a lot of work on contracting with disadvantaged minority women and emergency small businesses. We've also spent a lot of time increasing our engagements with communities of color and other groups, such as the Muslim American community. Year two plan, what it says there, the year two plan, which is in the coming year, use more racial equity lens in our decision making. We have just kicked off, actually Monday it will kick off, a job shadow program for our own employees that will allow employees to sign up to go work with somebody else in the bureau for a week or so and see if they might like to pursue that as a career opportunity. We've redesigned our website with special consideration for what we're calling the digital divide. Most of us often make the assumption that everybody's got a computer and everybody's got a cell phone, and that's absolutely not true. So we try and think about other ways we can communicate with folks who either don't have or are not able to use a computer and our infamous cell phones. We have continuing training on equity within the Bureau, and we look for opportunities to create more equity in all of our programs and policies. What are our big challenges? Keep harping on this regulatory thing. Regulations. We are driven by regulations. It's hard to explain how important that is because most people aren't driven by regulations like we are. It's a city code governs most of the city's activities. We can write that code and change that code within some fairly broad legal limits. We are at the beck and call in the water quality world of the federal government and the state government, and we must comply. Our two big drivers, which drive corrosion control and filtration, are the LT2 treatment requirement and the lead and copper rule. We've put those off as long as we can, and they have now come home to roost, and hence the big bump in the capital budget. The second big challenge is aging infrastructure. Many parts of our system are more than 100 years old. I used to be able to say that the system was older than me on the average, but I can't say that anymore because I'm older than the system on the average. It's a sad state. Thankfully, our pipes and distribution system lasts a long time, but it's not something we can be casual about. It's a good news, bad news story. Our infrastructure, it falls apart slowly. That's the good news. The bad news is it falls apart slowly. You can't keep kicking the can down the road. The more you kick the can down the road, the more you are mortgaging the future of our grandchildren and their children.
Want to pause here and thank you for that particular image, which looks more like it's being visited by a heavenly body for the rest of our budget committee. The images we get at council when they want to repair a inside of a pipe, they are not pretty. Thank you for that one, Mike.
We've done some interesting pipe repairs. Just a quick story. A 36-inch pipeline that goes underneath the river. We put a diver on the inside of the pipe, and he went a quarter of the way under the river to repair a leak.
That's horrible.
Now, I used to be a diver, and I have dove for work, inspection dives.
You put somebody inside?
Yes, ma'am.
A pipe?
Yes, ma'am.
Sounds like something out of Dickens.
It does. I've done that, but it was on a 90-inch diameter pipe in the ocean, and I could do a flip turn with my tanks on. This guy had to go in and basically work his way back out. He thought it was a pretty normal thing to do. Marine diver. did a great job for us, and one of our river crossings was prepared and will last a few years.
I thought I was having nightmares after the pictures of the nasty images. That is really disturbing.
Brave soul. And last but not least in the challenge department is seismic risks. We don't actually say our whole system is in disarray. It's not really very helpful to do that. But the reality is most of our system is not seismically resilient, and that's true of most of the city. We have done an awful lot of work in the past 10 or 15 years in the resilience department. Our big bugaboo right now is pipes. We have my single biggest dollar value item is pipes. It's $2 billion, and it is not seismically resilient. Oregon is part of the Oregon Resilience Plan, has taken a very wise approach. Nobody's got the money. You don't have the money to hand me $2 billion to replace the whole pipe system. And that's understandable. What we wrote in the Oregon Resilience Plan was it's a 50-year project, and it's a 50-year project not to replace the whole thing, but to replace a backbone so I can move water around the city, generally supply places that you would imagine would really need to be supplied, that their supply would be secure, schools, the hospitals, five or six hospitals around the city, jails, surprisingly, folks are trapped in jails. We have to make sure that they've got water. So those are what my big challenges are. Major projects that we've completed in 13-14, Palview 2, you can see the big picture up there. I remember Commissioner Fritz, we drug her out there through all the formwork and so on. Kelly Butte, Dam 2 Tower, which allows us to comply with the Habitat Conservation Plan, a federal requirement. Some people don't quite understand why we have a Habitat Conservation Plan. I think it's one of the smartest things that the Bureau has ever done. There's a gentleman sitting behind me, Edward Campbell, led that effort. What that does is give us regulatory certainty. That certainty, instead of having to do a NEPA document every time we do something in the watershed, we are covered by this Habitat Conservation Plan. Very smart. We have made upgrades to our operations facilities at Interstate. It is now seismically resilient. If you happen to know somehow that there was going to be an earthquake, go to the Interstate facility. It will be there and functional when the earthquake's over. That's about $266 million worth of work that we've put in that basically makes us seismically resilient. So what does our program look like? There. I'm not going to try and go through each bar, but I will point out two, the orange one and the big blue one. The orange one is the distribution system. That's how water moves around the city, extremely important. And the blue one is filtration and corrosion control. Those are federally driven things that we absolutely must complete. So what do these major projects look like? Willamette River Crossing. Chief engineers and Water Bureau directors have strange nightmares, and my nightmares go like all the crossings that we have on the river right now would break in an earthquake. We know statistically that 3 of the 5 will break at least. We can't tell you which 3 of the existing 5. They're all small, relatively small. They were all built in the 60s. There is no seismic anything to do with them. And the Willamette River crossing will be a 46 or 48-inch pipeline down in the rock underneath the river. The second thing, Washington Park, you've seen our story on Washington Park. It's basically 2 facilities. It's the seismic part and then the tank to hold the water. Corrosion control improvement. This is not our picture. We haven't built that thing yet, but I wanted to show you kind of what it looks like. This is from Salem. It's about the right size, more or less. And a filtration plant. The plant you see in the picture is Tacoma. That's about the size that ours will be 10 years hence. Forecast update. Water retail rate forecast. Our request is 8.9% rate increase to fund the budget we submitted. That's balanced by BES so that we come out with under 5. The rates are required to fund the capital program, begin funding of the filtration plant, and the positions that we have requested. This does not include CBO's recommendation to fund fountains. We're utilizing the rate stabilization account to stabilize rates over the next 10 years at 7.4%, and that will leave BES and water, if we proceed as we have, with a combined rate of about 4.5% each year.
Why is the yes, ma'am, capital program so small in 2027?
Where are you at? 2027. What this reflects, and I may have to have Cecilia bail me out, but that big fat blue bar, which makes the rest of it small, is right now TVWD may be leaving the system. They are busy building a treatment plant on the Willamette River right now, and we're in active discussions with them on how we're going to jointly operate. But we are conservative souls, and they could leave the system in 2027, and that messes up with the charts. And you can take it from there if you want to.
No, but the question she asked was about the capital program. Why is it in 2027 so much smaller? Cecilia, why don't you jump in?
And then it goes back to a higher level in 28.
Sure. Cecilia Hume with the Water Bureau. Right about 2026 and 27 is when we'll be drawing on the rate stabilization account to keep rates stabilized. So with the offset of the use of the money from the rate stabilization account, we're able to show the impact of funding the capital program rate impact to be at a minimum.
I'm probably going to need that explained to me offline in a 8th grade level, because I don't quite understand it.
We are. What we're showing there is the cost to issue our revenue bonds to fund the capital program is being offset with using the rate stabilization account to minimize that rate impact.
It's which part of
it? Yeah, like I said, I'm going to need somebody to explain it to me.
We'll come talk to you.
Step by step. Thank you.
So our requested budget decision packages...
Move the mic closer to you, if you would.
Oh, sorry. So our budget decision packages, I won't go through each of them, but I will say that 12 of the 21 positions are related to filtration and corrosion control. We have also asked for an equity manager position that's been endorsed by CBO and the Office of Equity and Human Rights. Our focus primarily in asking for these positions is system resilience and regulatory requirements, and I will leave it at that. Going to the next page, Water Bureau, we basically manage very tightly. Between, say, 2009 and 2015-16, we cut over 100 positions out of the Water Bureau. That's through 2016. We did that for budgetary reasons. It was smart to do. It was a combination of retirements and positions canceled and also actual layoffs. 2008 or 15-16, then we've started to pick up positions and add back because of our fiscal requirements. Today, we're 77 positions less than we were 10 years ago. Our position request, we believe, is a reasonable one. To deal with what's been parked on our plate, largely because of federal regulation. So our bottom line, where are we at? I always like to bring our little water supply here. This is a gallon and a half of water, good old Portland water, and that's what it costs, a penny. I had to borrow this from actually Gabe's admin assistant because I didn't happen to have a penny. So by comparison, it might cost a little bit more if you lived in Beaverton, or Tigard, rather, excuse me, and might cost a little bit less if you lived in Beaverton, but we're kind of in the happy middle there. Summary for the whole shebang, you can see $107.9 million for a monthly bill is what your current bill is, and the requested bill would be $113.34. And we think it's good bang for the buck. Typical combined water and sewer stormwater bill increase for both of us is $5.37 per month. And that's a combined rate of 4.97%. So that concludes my formal presentation. We're available for questions.
Thank you very much, Director Stewart. Now we'll call on the Portland Utility Board for their analysis. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank Mike Sturr, Gabe, Cecilia, Liam, and Jeff, who were just playing first class in providing the information to the board, and that required several rounds of questions. So thank you again. In summary, the PUB supports 12 of the 21 FTEs requested by the Water Bureau. It does not support 4 of the requested FTEs and has no recommendation on 5 of the requested FTEs. It also supports, with some reservation, the proposals to expand the low-income assistance program. We have our correspondence with our complete recommendations, but I'd like to take a few minutes to take a look at some of the requests. The Water Bureau is requesting 7 FTEs for the filtration facility approved by Council and supported by the PUB last summer. PUB supports most of these positions. We are supportive of the positions viewed as part of the core team, but raise concerns over some of the positions. Filtration is a large, complex, and decade-long project, and the requests were viewed in light of the other request positions and the number of new staff the Bureau can absorb at a current workload and overall vacancy in the Bureau today. PUB does not support one of the engineering positions, rather requesting that the Bureau could fill them with contracted services. We also discussed the timing of the two operators requested. Well, there was consensus for one position. Many members felt the second could be requested later in the process. The Water Bureau is requesting 5 FTEs for unidirectional flushing. This is related to both corrosion control and the filtration project. All members were supportive of the implementation of the system-wide unidirectional flushing, which will improve overall water quality and potentially decrease the amount of chemicals that may be needed for corrosion control. Member discussion focused on the timing of the team expansion in light of other requested positions by the Bureau. PUB supports 3 of the FTEs, which would provide 2 dedicated teams for flushing. While a few members supported all 3 of these positions, others thought it better for the Bureau to first transition the 2 dedicated teams, evaluate how many miles of flushing the dedicated teams would complete, and assess the capacity of the internal support staff. The PUB does not support the request for the equity manager. All members are supportive of the equity goals of the city and believe implementation of the plans are essential to the Bureau's progress. Members disagreed on the need of an additional Bureau staff in order to accomplish these goals. Some members strongly support the request for a dedicated manager. However, a majority of the members noted that the work the Bureau has done in its first year's implementation and thought this request should be reconsidered later. The Water Bureau currently has 4 staff that work on the plan implementation, and in a recent presentation to the board demonstrated progress in their first year. The Bureau listed this priority as a low priority and this request as a low priority in relation to the other requests because it felt it could continue to make progress, though less than if it received another FTE. Several members raised the issue of location of the manager were it be approved, and that this could be an area where the 2 utilities could see efficiency by joining efforts. Some members also noted the need for the City Council and the Bureaus to break down the current siloed paradigms of the 2 Bureaus and talk on how the Bureaus can share resources. The Water Bureau proposed several changes to its low-income assistant program. All members supported the assistant that the Bureau would provide low-income customers. We also recognize that the current program has a limited reach and needs to be revised to better meet the needs of our community. The Water Bureau presented proposed changes to a subcommittee in November at PUB, provided answers to our questions from board members in both December and January, and then developed the proposals in February and March. All members appreciate the work that the Bureau has done, but several members remain concerned about the extent to which the program is currently undeveloped and advise the Bureau to take some more time to analyze their data and get better alignment and a better design. And we realize this is an opportunity to tweak as you move forward. The proposal of transferring $600,000 to a community group for eviction assistance for the customers in multifamily residents has little precedent nationwide, and members express concern about the efficacy of the proposal and the lack of specified measures to track performance. Other members expressed a willingness to support the experiment, knowing that the Bureau will need to revise the program as they go forth. After much discussion, a majority of the members supported recommending one program specialist and four program changes. The members did not have a majority that supported recommending for or against the second program specialist. Some PUB members thought it is important to communicate to City Council the level to which this program has yet to be developed. PUB will be requesting regular updates as this program develops and recommends the City Council should at a minimum require annual progress reports. There is a request for general funds support for preservation work at Mount Tabor. This request does not impact water rates, and board members declined to make a recommendation on that request. Several members raised concern that the $4 million commitment from City Council would fall short of the total costs to complete the preservation work needed at Mount Tabor, and it doesn't include the long-term costs of operation maintaining those assets. Members suggest the City Council to revisit this issue. Finally, PUB does not support the recommendation from the CBO that the decorative fountains be funded with water rate revenues. If it did, this would result in a 0.4% rate increase for all customers. It is not a priority for the Water Bureau at this time, when they have had several other very important core mission directions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chair. And now we'll call on Janice Thompson for the Oregon Citizens Utility Board review. Welcome.
So, five-page memos.
Can you put your mic a little closer?
Thank you for the reminder. So I pulled the low-income program expansion discussion that's part of the decision package out on its own. And in some, there are some cases where we agree and some cases where we don't agree with CBO. But again, that's kind of the main cross-reference point in this memo. So I see this program expansion as being an opportunity to increase the effectiveness of what the Bureau has been doing and really explore some much-needed other options. Yes, it's new. I think it reflects thinking by the Bureau on how to do some things that folks have not figured out elsewhere. Obviously, they're building in some, I think, safeguards and whatnot, and we'll be evaluating. But I think the historic kind of staffing level of just one person is no longer adequate. And that it's a kind of a situation where if you're going to, you know, kind of revamp and beef it up, kind of do it right. And so I think there has been a one-person program. That person is recently retired. And so I actually support adding the two new positions for a total of a three-person team. I just think this is an opportunity to kind of hire to take a team approach to hiring, and that data analysis is kind of a new need, as well as expanded outreach capacity. And so definitely support the two additional positions, which means the Bureau is putting together a three-person team. The crisis voucher increase, the request from the Bureau was go up to 500. There was some discussion of, 300. If indeed, the 500 seems too high, I would argue that 300 would be the kind of the floor and does not support the kind of retaining at 150. There's this adjustment income guidelines, the new discount for extremely low income discounts we're in support of, and in both those cases in agreement with the CBO. So the multifamily low-income crisis assistance, there just has been this long time inequity in how low-income renters are addressed, because they don't get the utility bills kind of as a separate bill; it's part of their rent, and that historic inequity has just gotten worse. This is an issue that is not at all unique to Portland, and I think in the work that the Water Bureau has done to come up with this multifamily crisis assistance proposal is, some forward thinking. It uses an existing kind of program, which seems strategic. It's not trying to reinvent, invent something out of a whole cloth all on its own. It has met, vigorous legal review. There are plans, I think, for a strict intergovernmental agreement. I think it's important to note that though the proposed level of financial support, I think, is appropriate for a pilot project, it's possible that not all those fundings might be used in the first couple of years. And I think there the caution should be, don't think that the need's not there. Rather, I think that message should be evaluate to see how the program, could be improved. Because in general, if anything, devoting considerably more resources to this approach down the line, I think does seem warranted, because even with these dollars, we are still seeing a significant disparity in terms of the proposed dollars on this assistance provided to low-income renters compared to the current dollars that are devoted to discounts for low-income customers. So this is an important step forward, but just in terms of raw dollars, it's still there's more that could be done. The other decision packages, again, kind of the agrees. Just this, the issue of bringing on two operators is an interesting one, and I think it's just, and I think so. Just two. I thought it was important enough that I added just two quick points, as opposed to just saying we agree with CBO and saving paper. one is that there are more immediate corrosion control treatment requirements, but in terms of the filtration plant, this is not like building a building. If you build a building, there's all kinds of best practices and engineering and protocols, so that when you build a building without a lot of testing along the way that, the air conditioning system is going to work and the elevators are going to work. Well, you don't want to build a filtration plant and then, once it's all done, start doing the operating and testing. I mean, it's just really it's a whole different kind of project. And so the testing on a model basis and whatnot, the testing which implicitly is testing how it operates, is just part and parcel of the design function. And so that's, to me, is why the request makes sense. In terms of the workforce management, I think CBO definitely identified the top two priorities, the safety inspector and specialty public works. We saw more logic than they did in also supporting the Bureau's third request for a general public works inspector. So we'd request that the mayor's office take a closer look at that. The asset management recommendation, in terms of communications, this is just always really a tricky issue. We raised in our memo, first our phase one memo, some questions that were adequately addressed by the Bureau. But it just seems like communications is just always going to be this topic, this need that falls to the end of the list. You know, well, we need to do this. At the same time, consistently, it seems like the bureaus are asked to do more in communications. And so since we kind of agree with this general need for communication, we supported, you know, the inclusion of this position, which is counter to the CBO. But bigger picture, it does seem like, you know, the reallocation process may end up being used to fit this need. And so that there's really, I think, a bigger picture signal that I think would be helpful about how the value the mayor and the city council places on the Water Bureau's communications capacity. So so there's, you know, so in other words, even, because, I'll leave it at that. The equity, separately agree with CBO support for the equity manager. The Mount Tabor issue is honoring a previous city council decision, and though, you know, the current council can always revisit that, this is a discussion to not revisit, in my view. There's a small parks maintenance recommendation that I agree with the CBO on. So in terms of the decorative fountains, also disagreed with CBO's recommendation. And, I mean, one reason has been noted is that it would nudge the combined rate above, you know, the requested, the directive from Commissioner Fish. But I think more importantly, and partly we are in this post-settlement, you know, is that even if a ruling along the way said that Water Bureau funds could be used, it just seems like there's a time to really take a look at does that make sense in terms of the respective missions of both parks and the Water Bureau. In other words, that decision doesn't necessarily mean that water rates have to be used, and it's worth considering whether or not general fund dollars is a more appropriate source of dollars. So, you know, we took a look at I kind of like history. So there was the 1988 ordinance that transferred the decorative fountain assets from parks to what was then called the Bureau of Water Works. And in the ordinance, it specifies that this is kind of linked to a budget decision that also that transferred that responsibility. And, you know, as I say, correlation is not causation. But I'm hard-pressed to think that it's just a total coincidence that in 1988, the City Council also adopted a target to use 28% of the revenue from utility license fees for transportation. It was not a mandate, but it was a target. In effect, that target shrank the amount of general fund dollars. So regardless of how that might have influenced this transfer back in 1988, I think where we're at now is let's just step back. And I think the current decision is just really whether or not to adopt this recommendation needs to be just on the basis of taking a look at the two missions. And I think for CUB, we've come down on the side of operating decorative fountains as not being a critical function of a water utility with, as I mentioned right here, the tipping point in this no answer being linked to the word decorative. So we, so we would support use of general fund dollars for this. If, however, the mayor and the council decides to recommend or decides to accept the CBO recommendation and rate fair funders funding will be used, then the Water Bureau needs to be really given cost containment authority and kind of clear control over maintenance decisions. They can't just be like, they're going to pay it, so, you know, we want to do this with it. But actually what may be most important is make a decision. It just has been bouncing back and forth. It's understandable why it's been bouncing back and forth, but one way or another, decide. CUB's recommendation is decide against the CBO recommendation. I will just let you read the final comments. In the context of the Phase 1 memo, there were a couple of CIP issues that came up where, you know, could some tinkering be done given the new decision for filtration? And so this is some conversation where, you know, I was really appreciative the Bureau's kind of taking a look at some of these ideas and whatnot, and they're here provided here, however, primarily for on an informational basis.
Janice, thank you very much, and we have your extensive and thoughtful written submission for the record. We're now going to take questions. Commissioner Fritz.
Well, thank you again for CUB and the PUB's great work for the Bureau's presentation and for our budget advisors being here, everybody else, our Labour partners. I very much appreciate CUB's support for the low-income program, and I would suggest that the equity manager position should be perhaps seen as part of that. That you've already dedicated, usually I'm here saying you should find it out of existing resources. We've already dedicated a large portion of four members of the staff to equity work. So it does seem appropriate to do that, particularly as you take on this big new program. How about if somebody else has a turn while I choke quietly for?
Okay.
I can go. Thank you. I have a comment and a question. Director Sturr, first of all, I want to express my appreciation for your urgency in earthquake preparation. I am from Puerto Rico, and as you know, we had a hurricane. We were expecting the hurricane. The hurricane came. We only lost 3 lives in a country of 3 million people on that 24-hour span. The crisis and the real problem was not the hurricane. The disaster was the infrastructure for the water department. So my question is, how, and the power department too, but how long will it take to get ready?
It's sort of, I'm not really trying to be flip, but it depends upon how much money you put into the system on what schedule. But there's more to getting ready, as you know, than dealing with the infrastructure. We often don't talk enough about emergency preparedness, the EOC responder kind of thing. I think we're in very good shape in that regard. The Oregon Resilience Plan, which was written by a bunch of volunteers because the state doesn't have a lot of money, but they did a really fantastic job. There were 300 professionals in various walks of life who participated in writing that. 28 of my closest friends in the water business helped write the water wastewater chapter, which is chapter 8. We decided that what we would say was build the backbone. That takes a long time because, as I told you, our water system has $2 billion worth of pipe, most of which is not seismically up to date. Another truth in this game is that I could still break a pipe I just built. I mean, the earth is a funny thing. When it starts to move, it's huge masses moving. So somewhere between 30 and 50 years, we would be as ready as we could be. I think that Portland is better off than many. We've had actually excellent support from City Council and our commissioner in the work that we've done. Our maintenance facility is up to date. It will survive an earthquake. The dams will survive an earthquake, although the dominant earthquake at the dams is not the subduction zone earthquake. It's a local earthquake. We have hardened our distribution reservoirs are all virtually brand new, and there's Washington Park will be completed. So we've done a great deal that's already there and already up to snuff. But as I mentioned, the bugaboo right now is the pipe, and that's something that will begin showing up in our capital plans in the next few years. Now, there's another good thing about that I talk about, and people talk about silos. I think the silos are less evident than most believe. The bureaus actually do work closely together. The three infrastructure bureaus, PBOT, BES, and Water, to a lesser extent, Parks. If Mike Jordan and I tear a street up, if we both work on our pipes in the street, because basically we follow each other around, we have basically torn up the street, and we can legitimately replace that street. So when in the seismic world, when BES completes their seismic plan, which should be in the next 6 or 8 months, maybe they're still here and they could chime in, we intend to sit down with PBOT and Water and start looking at where our various backbones are and where we can team up and do things at the same time. And in an ideal world, BES and Water would replace major transmission pipes, usually in one of our major streets, and PBOT could take care of the sidewalks and all that, and we would get more bang for the buck. But it takes time and it takes money to become seismically resilient.
Thank you.
Sorry for the long-winded answer.
We'll come back now to Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. It seems to me that there are three main areas where we're talking about general fund versus rate funds, and it's really a matter of what services do we want and how do we want to pay for them and how can we pay for them. And so the first is the Mount Tabor reservoirs. I was chagrined when Cub suggested that council might reconsider that. I think Commissioner Fish and I would be similarly over my dead body stance on that, but you said that they shouldn't, but I wouldn't. I guess I'm emphasizing that. The City Budget Office's write-up mentions that Reservoir 1 is most in need of repair. It has a concrete lining that needs repair, no under-drain system to monitor how much it leaks. So if the general fund just took this on, we, the general fund, took it on in a state of disrepair. And although it's no longer a needed for the water system, it was a condition of approval of getting the required, taking the reservoir offline, land use approval. So I believe we absolutely need to discuss whether, at the very least, some of the settlements of that land use case should come from rates, because we held off during the lawsuit, which we're no longer talking about. And now is the time to look at what's fair in that regard, because the council didn't specify whether general fund or rates was going to pay for that. But had that settlement not happened, we'd probably still be in litigation about taking the reservoirs offline. And the Water Bureau, you mentioned at the beginning regulatory compliance and resilience. The Water Bureau would be in a ton of trouble on both fronts were we still drinking from the open reservoirs at Mount Tabor. So I think we should definitely consider that. Secondly, the parks maintenance package. City Budget Office is recommending $2 million in reduction in parks maintenance in the park system. And yet they're recommending that the general fund pay $225,000 for maintenance in Water Bureau property parks. But the one that really chaps my hide is the Dodge Park maintenance. Dodge Park is not part of the city's park system. It has very minimal benefit to the citizens of Portland, and yet there's a request for $61,700 for maintenance there. if it's needed by the Water Bureau, well and good. If not, let's talk about getting rid of it. What we're doing in the park system is we've got community centres closing. We've got maintenance in other parks going away. I'm looking at other properties that we're not using that we can dispose of. I understand that Dodge Park is needed for security for the Bull Run and for other purposes. And if that's the case, then what the rates should be paying for the maintenance there and for the other some of the other ones. And finally, for decorative fountains, I greatly appreciate the Cubs' analysis and the calling out of the change in 1988. The council only either once or twice actually allocated 28% of the utility license fees to transportation maintenance. And that was why in 2013, the council agreed to an ordinance that did away with that policy and instead, at the same time, dedicated half of all one-time resources to maintenance in parks, emergency management, and transportation. And that has resulted in $60 million going into those three crucial maintenance needs since we passed that resolution. So I do agree with the last paragraph that the Cub wrote. Perhaps the most important outcome is for the City Council to make a definitive determination on this topic. It is time to end the recent dynamic of the decorative fountains being tossed back and forth between Parks and the Water Bureau during budget deliberations. And I just ask you to consider the staff who are doing that work, who every year they've been on the cut list for the last 8 years, and every year they've not known whether they're going to have a job. And just as the decorative fountains may not be core to the Water Bureau's mission, they're not core to the Parks Bureau's mission either. On the other hand, if you were to ask the people of Portland what do they love about Portland, that would be way up there. Now, when it's not raining, I tend to get off my bus at the Development Services Building and walk down the Halperin Fountain sequence and then through Ira Keller Park to come to City Hall.